3, 2, 1. Welcome to Comic Culture, the radio show that champions the local comic book shop. We're broadcasting at 93.3 CFMU FM, McMaster Radio, and podcasting at comicbookdaily.com and getthepointradio.com. I am Walter Duralia, Overstreet Price Guide Advisor.
I'm Scott Vanderplew, Editor-in-Chief of comicbookdaily.com.
And I'm Anthony Falcone, producer of Comic Culture Radio.
And as always, we are your cure for the summertime blues.
Brightening up your day using the world of comic books.
Yes, indeed, we are. Gentlemen, I guess I should welcome you guys to the show because you guys aren't regulars. I mean, Anthony, you're a regular. I don't know what you're. I mean, you're regularly, you know, give us crap about what we're doing on the show. But Chris is off, as you guys know.
Chris is celebrating.
Yes.
He's celebrating.
Chris is
exciting
and
times.
Thanks for you guys for coming in to fill in.
So for our regular listeners, Chris got married last week.
Yeah.
So it was exciting times. Walt, you were at the festivities, right?
I was at
the,
you know, it was a wedding, a geek fest. It was just, So you walk up, Anthony, I'm walking up to the, it was like in a pavilion. It was outside. It was a little bit hot. It was Friday.
An outside pavilion.
It was outside pavilion. And you walk up, and so you immediately were looking for where we're going to sit.
Yeah.
And there's about 15 tables, and at each table on the centerpiece, there is a wedding cover for a comic. But like, say, the Spider-Man wedding. The Superman wedding, the Green Lantern wedding. There's, I don't know how many of them, but there are wedding covers for comics. And so there's a huge table, like a huge billboard. And under each superhero, so you get that, you know, that font for each superhero, you know, the cover fonts, you know, the Amazing Spider-Man, the classic. And under that, it's the party of the people that sit on that table. So the guy there, Walter and Janine, let's see. You were at the Spider-Man table, right? And it was cool. I took a picture of it. Scott, I'm going to email you the picture.
Wonderful.
It was the coolest thing ever. And then, so people basically sat at the superhero that they're designated at.
But everybody wore normal, the bride and groom wore traditional clothing, and there was no crazy superhero costumes for the wedding party?
No, it wasn't. But that was one geekiness.
Yeah.
And the second geeky part was the lovely bride's name is Angela.
Mm-hmm.
The priest, who is a comic book fan like Chris, he started going into kind of a geek during the ceremony. It was a beautiful words, you know, like a wedding, beautiful words about commitment and cherishing and respecting and all that stuff. Beautiful, beautiful words. But in it, he mixes stuff like, you know, and of course, you know, our lovely Angela, who we shouldn't confuse with the Angela that Todd McFarlane and Neil Gaiman introduced in Spawn number 9. You know, this was part of his
thing. This is part of the whole thing.
Now,
right?
The great part about it was, in the crowd, about a third of them were geeks, and they're killing themselves laughing. And then, like, the two thirds of the other people are looking at each other, like, what the hell's happening?
I know.
It was a lot of fun. It was good. It was just enough low keyness to the kind of geeky homage to Chris's tastes and stuff that it didn't interfere with the beauty of the wedding. It was like an accent.
Just an expression of his personality.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. It was very
Chris
good.
Got to share his love and his hobby with all of these people.
Absolutely.
You know?
Yeah.
And this big important day. Now, what was the wedding topper though? Like on top of the wedding cake.
Lego.
Legos.
Yeah. Lego.
Nice.
Modified Lego pieces.
Modified Lego pieces. Well,
hopefully,
we'll get some pics. We'll throw them up because we're going to want to show them to our listeners.
Yes.
So they can really get the full effect of this.
All right.
No?
All right.
But so anyway, moral of the story on that one is that's why Chris isn't here today.
That's why Chris isn't here. Him and his lovely wife are enjoying a well-deserved break and a honeymoon. All right, so let's keep it going. What are we going to do? We're going to do new this week, right, Anthony?
That's right, yeah, new this week. Always first. Well,
right,
we've never deviated in 150 shows.
I think I would have learned from now. All right, so new this week is brought to you by 4D Movies. Think of how awesome it would be to smell Wolverine or feel the punch by Hulk. 4D, making 3D look like a pile since 2015.
I'm pretty excited about 4D, Walt. That sounds like our sponsors are really thinking ahead now.
Really ahead. Yeah.
They're trying to be the next big thing.
I'm sure they'll work in Smell-O-Vision as well.
I'm sure.
Listen, so new this week, you guys picked a few. What are we looking for this week? Guys are heading into their comic shop. They're gonna, you know, pick up their normal pickups. But you and I and Scott are here to tell them what else they should be maybe considering, having a look, picking up, perusing, and hopefully taking to the cache.
Yeah, I mean, there are quite a few hidden gems this week.
Hit me with a couple.
I think that everybody would be doing themselves a disservice if they bypassed Space Punisher. Space Punisher number one comes out this week. Gorgeous painted art by Mark Texeira, written by Frank Terry. And Punisher is one of those characters that doesn't really work in the normal Marvel universe. But Punisher in space, punching people in the groin, shooting them out of the airlock. I think that that this is going to be a lot of really, really solid work. And I think that, even though it sounds a little bit wacky and people, I think, are going to turn their noses up at this, I think they're doing themselves, a bit of a disservice. And they should definitely pick this one up.
All right. Scott, how about you? You got something?
Absolutely, because my interest is graphic novels. I don't buy the floppies anymore.
I see that.
But the pick for sure this week is Black Sad Silent Hell. That's by a French comic, a French team of Juan Canales and Juanio Garnido.
Now, is that the same? I've read Black Sad. I've enjoyed Black Sad immensely, right? Is that the same creative team as the initial Black Sad that I would have known?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Okay. So they were released. There were two softcover English versions released in the 90s, and they were long out of print. And Dark Horse brought them back in a deluxe hardcover last year.
Yeah, remember.
With the third volume, which is first time in print. And now they're releasing this fourth volume as a standalone hardcover.
Excelente.
So it looks fabulous. I saw a 10-page preview. Looks really good. I have a second pick for this week as well. Being true Canadians and a diehard fan, Parker the Score by Darwin Cook is released as well. And that is just going to be a hot, hot book. He's done amazingly well with the Parker series, the adaptations. I picked up that Parker Martini edition and reviewed it on Comic Book Daily. It's a gorgeous book, and now this is the third in the series, and it looks amazing as well.
And I mean, for those of you who don't know Parker, but who might know Mel Gibson, right? Mel Gibson did that movie Payback. Mm-hmm. Payback was based on the original Parker novels. So if you were a fan of that movie and if you said, man, that Payback movie was great, I want to see more Payback.
Right.
This is based on the original source material, and it's even better than the Mel Gibson Payback movie, if that was even possible.
Right.
That was a good movie. And it's Donald Westlake wrote the books.
See, I thought it was based on a James Brown song.
Mm. No, but good.
Can see how that would be confusing.
Good call there. Right. Walt, what's your pick for the week?
Okay. My pick, guys, I guess I'm picking the populist pick because you guys are connoisseurs. You guys are going for the, those kind of hidden gems, whereas I'm going with Walking Dead 100 this week. There are, I think, 33 different covers to number one. Or it could be eight. I'm not sure. But there's a lot of covers to number one. Guys are signing up for all of them. It's going to be a high, high, high demand book this week.
So wait. You have customers who have told you, throw one of every cover in my bin.
Absolutely.
And isn't there a deluxe chrome cover or something along those lines?
You know what? I've lost track, Scott.
All right.
I don't know. There are too many covers. You know what, though, Anthony? I'm going to tell you the truth, okay? Mark, myself, everybody at the shop, we encourage just picking up one. Like, we don't encourage, how can I say it? Listen, everybody's dollar is hard fought, right? And you know, we go, hey, you sure you need all eight? You know, same story inside. You know, we've never been ones to champion the buy the same thing but 18 different covers of it and stuff like that. I don't think it's a great strategy long term for these companies on because what are we selling, right? Are we selling the gimmick or are we the collectability or are we selling the story? And I think of any property, it's Walking Dead that's selling the story. Right, so it almost flies in the face of the premise of Walking Dead and what made the Walking Dead great, which is the storytelling, is to come out with eight covers of number 100.
No, I mean the regular cover is pretty sweet because it has everybody like any main character who has died over the last 99 issues is on that cover.
Mm-hmm.
But our Are all of the extra covers in that way as well?
Like, I'm not sure. I haven't seen pictures of the extra covers. I know that there are different artists doing the covers and stuff like that. So I'm not sure.
It's a variety. Frank Whiteley is doing a Grandma Zombie cover. It's pretty nice. So it's just a variety.
See,
of covers.
Scott signed up for the
Scott
Grandma
knows.
Zombie.
He wants the Grandma. He has for the Grandma Zombies. Yeah,
Grandma Zombie.
Want to make
cover.
Sure that it's
gotta there. Have that Grandma Zombie.
It's
cover.
A great image, and I featured it in web art a few weeks ago on Comic Daily.
Well, we all know. That we all remember that we all
that was
it
a good
sticks
one,
it burns right in our mind.
I know.
The Grandma Zombie.
So right. Yeah. So
do you have
Dead.
A kids pick this week? Do you have a kids pick
I
that
don't.
You liked?
No.
Anything that comes out?
I can't think.
You know.
There's always what always does well. What people always wait for are the digests, the Archie digests.
Oh, it's the worst. I honestly wish you would stop picking. Okay, parents out there, do not purchase Archie comics for your children. They're awful, awful comics.
Why are they awful comics?
Because they're like Archie is a bad role model. Archie is a bad role model for young girls and young boys. Shouldn't be out making dates with two different women on the same night. having these two women, you know, trying to you know,
you
like date you and all that sort of stuff. It's not harmless fun. I actually, if there was one comic which I think people should read, it actually would be Archie.
Right.
I would definitely say that's one that they shouldn't.
So what Anthony's trying to say is that the divorce rate in North America since Archie Publications started has risen. Probably.
Listen, correlation is not causation, but I'm pretty sure we could track.
Right.
We could track Archie sales with divorces directly.
Well, listen, though I'm going to fight right back at you. They've had wedding issues in the past here, now recent ones, so perhaps a spike in weddings will happen. So there you go. All right, I'm going to end it. I get to say the last thing, right? So
yes, you do get to say the last
thing. And then we'll just go.
No matter how incorrect that is,
no matter
you
how
always get to say
is.
The last thing.
All right, so listen, those are just what? Scott, that's all the picks, right?
Absolutely.
All right, so those are just a few of the picks heading into your local shop this week. Please head into your local comic book store. Check the new this week shelves out and, do more than peruse. Pick up a couple that you wouldn't normally pick up. Take them over to the cash and try them out. All right, we're moving right along. Anthony, what do you have lined up? You have mailbag, right?
Mailbag. So Comic Culture Mailbag is brought to you by The 52 Now, the new superhero comic reboot by Marvel and DC. Yes, you'll enjoy a full 6 issues of the Uncanny Justice League of Avengers until we reboot it again. Pick up a new number one today.
Cynical.
Cynical sponsors.
Cynical sponsors.
Not just today. Every day could be a new number one.
Every day should just be a new number one.
All right.
All right. So as our listeners well know, we monitor the Comic Culture Mailbag very closely. And every week we pick one or two questions that our listeners have sent in for Walt and Chris. So this one's directed to Walt.
All right. Go ahead.
Dear Walt, I'm going to Fan Expo for the first time this year. Do you have any tips for me? And that's from George in Vancouver, B.C.
George from Vancouver. Lots of tips, George. You know, it depends. You guys both know. You guys are both veterans of the cons. It is a daunting task to head into a con and enjoy the con. So these are expensive endeavors now, especially for young George here who's flying in from B.C., what you got to do is you got to make yourself a checklist. You make yourself a to-do list is the best way to go about it. It is you got to narrow down. Okay, what are your tastes? I mean, there's so many things at Fan Expo. What do you have? You have the Rue Morgue, the Horror Expo, right? You have the Sci-Fi
the Horror Expo.
The Horror Expo, the Sci-Fi Expo, the Anime Expo, the Comic Expo. You have not only that, but you have you can spend so much time in Artist Alley. You can spend so much time at the corporate booths, or you can spend so much time rummaging through old bins of comics, right? So there's just like you just basically have to just write down, you know, what are your priorities? Number one, number two, number three, cross-reference it to the program, okay, and then just start planning. If you go into these things just, it's cool, you know, and then you walk in, you haven't got a clue, you're going to waste your weekend. They're so busy. The lines are so large on some of the things. You just have to, you have to plan. George has to plan. George, you have to plan. You hear me? So that's the best way to go around this. These big, big cons, you have to go in prepared or you're going to miss the boat, because these things are, I don't know, my best way to put it is I think they're like, they're unique. They're precious. They're cool places to go, and they don't happen that often. Obviously, they happen now, I guess, once a week somewhere. But the big, you know, truly big ones, there's maybe, what, Scott, would you say maybe half dozen in North America?
Yeah, Fan Expo is the third largest exhibition in North America, following San Diego, which is next week, and New York, which is in October this year.
Right, and that means it's taken over Chicago in terms of
Yes.
Right. So these are big things, and very a lot of talented people, a lot of famous people, a lot of corporations, a lot of vendors come in with huge... they're huge endeavors to come set up to these things. And if you're not going in totally prepared, you're not going to realize the experience of where you're going. It's like, you know, Anthony, you went to Europe last year. I mean, you just don't fly into Rome and go, I don't know which way I should go, you know, and start walking, right? No, you kind of got to map it out. And...
Well, you can.
You might not come back.
Now, I mean, I also think that what people need to remember, too, is that, you know, Canadian fans, and I mean, this actually goes beyond comics. This goes in a lot of different stuff, but Canadians actually always a very passionate fan base for a lot of things, comics included.
Right.
And I think part of the reason for that is that even though we are sort of a smaller population than, say, our neighbors to the south,
yes.
right, if you're getting 70, 80,000 people who come to these big cons, that's a larger percentage of the whole population than, say, the big shows
right.
in the States would get, right? Because,
right?
I mean, San Diego gets 150,000 people.
Yes.
But there's, what, 300,000
300
people?
Yeah.
Right, 3 million people who
right.
live in the United States. Right? So it's still a small percentage of the overall population.
Uh-huh.
Whereas we're getting big, big numbers for actually, like, quite a smaller population. So there's a very passionate Canadian fan base for a lot
right.
of this stuff.
You're absolutely right. But what you've noticed, though, I mean, you've gone to the last few, and you have too, Scott, is that Toronto is getting more and more international people, though, flying in as well.
Yeah.
So we're getting a larger portion of guys that find that it's worth it to fly in from flipping Europe, from you know, from the South U.S., from the West U.S., from driving up from Ohio and Pennsylvania and stuff like that. So that part of the show is growing, too. It's becoming a tourist draw from outside of Canada as well, which is a testament to, you know, what it's doing, which is good stuff, right? So...
Do you have any tips for George there, Scotty V?
Well, because he's obviously a faithful listener to comic culture, I'd say comics is his focus for the visiting Fan Expo, and in that aspect, absolutely, you know, the schedule is your friend, and not only are you going to want to check out Artist Alley and pick off maybe three or five artists that you want to get a sketch by, but you really want to check out those panels, because there's panels going on the entire time. And if you don't lay out, just as Walt said, if you don't follow your schedule and lay out which panels you want to attend, you're going to end up missing something. You're going to be late. It's going to be full and you won't be able to get in. I mean, it's not as exciting as the San Diego panels where they're giving away exclusive items, prints, that kind of thing. But it's still a chance to meet and listen to your favorite creators.
Awesome. All right, Jason.
I personally would say, and again, George, I mean, I don't know you, so, you know, I mean no disrespect, but this is an important safety tip for anybody going to a con.
Yeah.
You should really, really have a shower before you go. And I mean, you really, if your plan is just to smell yourself first and see if you smell okay,
right.
you actually can't smell yourself. Like, if you smell bad, you actually don't know that yourself. That's something. So maybe get somebody else to smell you. Or really, really, the best bet and the safest way to do it is just have a shower before
right.
you, and use soap and water. Those are two key
shampoo
ingredients.
Too.
Shampoo,
yeah.
right? And then come and get ready, because a lot of people there, it can get smelly.
Yeah.
It can get a little bit stinky. And you know,
you don't want to be the guy
cry.
That they're looking at and stuff
yeah.
like that. And then, you know, after the shower, please don't put the same stuff on. You know, bring
yeah yeah
the new stuff,
new right. clothes and all that. So yeah. I mean, George, again, no disrespect meant. But just important safety tip for
See,
anybody.
Anthony,
out
you know
there.
What? I can tell that you've been in way too many a line.
You just got with
way too many a guy.
It happens.
That's that has
it happens
not right? had you time wanna... to jump into that shower. Before
but just one more thing before you
go
continue
one
as
more
well
thing.
Because it's very important.
Okay,
if you,
Columbo,
you're,
right. Let's go.
You're attending your fan expo. You're going to see a lot of people in costume. You're going to be excited. You're going to think, "Well, I want to get a picture of that person." Now, it is common con etiquette to ask the person to move over to the side of the aisle and get the picture taken. Don't stop the middle of the aisle and get pictures taken, because what happens, you get this massive log jam. You got 80,000 people trying to squeeze through a 6-foot area.
While you're
area.
Taking your flipping picture with,
exactly.
I don't know who.
Etiquette dictates.
Sailor
move
Moon.
Over to the side.
Sailor Uranus.
Yes. Yes. That's it. All right. I'm sure we've helped George out a lot.
Absolutely.
I think it's a lot of important tips there.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. So, George.
Public service, really.
Yeah. George, you should stop by the Big B booth at the con and say hi. All right, Anthony, that takes us into – see, you've got the map here. You've got the
I have the map. Now, technically, everybody has the map.
Oh, right. I have one too.
Because
right.
we have more
I
than one
it.
Page. Yeah.
Right, I see.
Yeah,
okay, go ahead.
We printed it out. But so our next segment is Industry News. Today, Industry News is brought to you by Spider-Man and Wolverine. We're overworked and we need some rest. Seriously. We're like on every team. Just give us a rest, Marvel.
Yeah, really.
Really,
yeah.
You know, you can't – I mean, you can barely pick up a book and not have Spider-Man or Wolverine be in it nowadays, right?
Yeah, you know what? That's going to backfire. If they keep doing that, that will backfire. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think so. It'd be some backlash against Spider-Man and Wolverine.
Yeah, and we wouldn't want to see that. All right. So let's talk – while we're on that subject, I figure the first thing we'll talk about is in industry news are the numbers coming out from Diamond Comic Distributors in June. Diamond, of course, is the monopoly on distribution of comics. So their June numbers show the top publishers being, of course, Marvel and DC. But what I liked about these numbers was the dollar share was relatively lower for Marvel DC. Together, they controlled a third each, approximately.
I'm sure Marvel loved that, too.
Well, no.
I'm sure they're pretty happy about
that. I didn't say that they love it. They hate it. I'm sure they want 90% of the market, if not 100%. But I like seeing the also-rans, as you call them. You know, the Images, the Dark Horses, the IDWs, the Dynamites, the Booms, and all that kind of stuff. I like it when they're controlling a larger portion of the pie, because I don't think the industry would be as good if you just had a two-horse race all the time. I think these other companies can produce good properties, and I want them to do well. I mean, what are you saying?
I'm just wondering, what would actually make you happy? Like, at what point do you actually want to see Marvel and DC give up enough of their share? Like, because right now they're sitting at around what, like, you know,
a third,
about a third, right? So, like, do you want them to get knocked down to a quarter? You want them to only be about 20%? Just to spread the love around a little bit more? How far do you actually want them to lose share?
This is the ideal situation in terms of me when I'm looking at the industry as a whole.
Yeah.
Okay. I want the pie to grow.
Yeah.
But I don't mind Marvel's and DC's share falling to even them controlling together half the industry or two-thirds. I mean, you know, between two-thirds and half is obviously something. I mean, you can't say, yeah, I want everybody to be the same. I want 10 companies to control 10% each or whatever. I don't know. I mean, it is what it is now. Marvel and DC are the giants, you know, and them hovering at around 65% is kind of I've been following this for a while. It's a bit abnormal in the sense that they're a lot higher normally. Right?
Right.
So falling to this level and a little bit below is healthy as long as they're what I don't want Marvel and DC to do is lose money or to lose actual volume. You know, you'd like to see that their volume increase, but you'd like to see the whole pie increase as well. So what you'd like to see is, you know, the pie to double and you know, their share. I mean, their share, I guess, decreased, but their overall profits increase. I want to see viable third, fourth, fifth, sixth publishers.
Right.
That's what I'd like to see.
Yeah.
You know, healthy, viable Image, a healthy, viable Dark Horse, a healthy, viable Art IDW is good for the comic industry, I think.
Because, I mean, like I think there's a lot of comparisons, really, that can be made between the television industry as well, right?
Right.
And that really the four main networks still control the majority of television shows, right?
Right.
I mean, the real difference is that they make lots of different kinds of shows.
Right.
But really, Marvel and DC have one type of comic book, like really one genre that they're working on, which is a superhero book, right?
Well, that's not true. I mean, they'll have some fantasy stuff. They'll have some licensed stuff. They'll have some stuff from, let's say, Stephen King, or they'll have some – I mean –
very small a percentage overall, though.
All right.
Of their published works.
Okay, but let's say, okay, right now DC obviously is in flux because of the New 52, but let's say even 2 years ago DC had branches that were not superhero. They had branches that were occultish, and they had, you know, they had things that were working that weren't superhero-y too, didn't they? I mean,
well, Vertigo was a long and successful run, but it was almost, as an arm of the publisher. I wouldn't even consider that DC. When Anthony says, you know, the superhero genre, you've got Marvel and DC. What do you think of, right? When you think of DC, do you immediately think of Vertigo books and that sort of off?
No, you think of Batman and Superman and Wonder Woman, obviously. But
so these big publishers, right,
yeah,
if they want to sort of increase, you know, some of their dollar share. And again, like these are companies that are making a lot of money out of what is popular, right?
Yes.
But so these are the companies that actually have – like the cash and the ability to take more chances, and should be doing some of this smaller press stuff within their own companies to try to increase readership. They're not really.
Yes.
Right?
Yes, like, fair enough. I mean, yeah.
And they're not, because, you know, like they're saying, well, you know what? That doesn't sell. But if I put out a Batman number one again, that will sell. So, I mean, I understand why they do it. I'm just saying that like the television companies and like the movie companies,
yeah,
you know, certain hits which are popular and which are mass produced and which the majority of people love, right?
Yep.
Those things make the company money where they should be able to take some artistic chances. And I think Marvel and DC need to start doing that more,
yeah, but,
especially when all these smaller companies are now starting to eat away at their pie.
Here's the problem. And this is you guys correct me if I'm wrong.
We're ready.
We will do that so fast.
But, you know, the way I see Marvel and DC, and the way I see, let's say, something like an Image or an IDW or a Dark Horse, let's do those three.
Okay.
Marvel and DC, they sell everything. It's like it's all within one. I mean, I don't know if I'm using the right word, but all within one, like, canon. There's one backdrop. There's one cohesive multi-universe that all those things are connected to. So if you're buying this comic on Marvel, like, say, Black Panther, if you're buying Fantastic Four, there's literally maybe one degree of separation between the two, right?
Sure.
So you're getting a lot of movement. It's like a liquid movement within those, I don't know, I'm just going to say a number, 100 titles that are happening a month. And you can swim through those titles because it's all within in the same pool. Right. Whereas, say, an IDW, it'll produce franchise licensed products that have maybe nothing to do with each other. You see, that's why IDW was trying to tie together their properties with that infestation thing.
Yeah.
Right. So they had like a property like Doctor Who. I may be getting the publishers and the properties wrong here. That's not the point. Okay, so don't correct me if I get it wrong. But they have like a Doctor.
Surprisingly, Who. Surprisingly, you're right so
right.
far.
They
so.
Have a Doctor Who and I was going to say Star Wars, but I know that's wrong. But anyway, let's say a Doctor Who and a Star Wars.
You were so close.
I know. I know Star Wars is Dark Horse, but my point is this.
Transformers would be an
Transformers,
IDW property.
Thank you. And they're so not connected. They've never been connected. They're two separate properties that are owned by separate things. And this company, this publishing company, is licensing those properties and satisfying the Doctor Who fans specifically. And then they're satisfying the Transformers fans specifically, right? But they're not – when you come into a Marvel, you can go through that Marvel universe and
swim through the universe.
Swim through the universe,
if you will.
And everything is connected, right?
The breaststroke.
Sorry.
Yet. Why are they – the only reason they're connecting them is to bring a popular character to a less popular title and get those readers. Spider-Man only appears in Speedball because Spider-Man's popular and Speedball wasn't. So they wanted all the Spider-Man readers to buy Speedball. They're not – the characters aren't appearing in each other's books to strengthen the universe. They're appearing to boost sales.
Maybe they're doing one and the same, though. Maybe because I guess what Anthony, like, I guess going back to your point, what you're saying is they should try these untried things, and, you know, these non-comic-y type things. I don't know if they know how to do that. I think the way that they would do it is, like you said, Scott, you know, do five issues that aren't working and then put Spider-Man on the cover.
Let's take a look at DC's New 52, right?
Right.
Okay. Let's take a look at Mr. Terrific.
Right.
Okay. That is a great character. Mm-hmm. That's a great character, solidly written.
Right.
The series had good art, yep. Right? It was canceled.
Okay.
You know?
I'm going to ask you a question just before I forget.
Yeah.
Did Batman come into Mr. Terrific?
You know, not to my knowledge. That was the main problem. They didn't bring enough Batman in there.
But you know
they
what?
They should have linked it
to
all
my
through.
Point, they should have linked it maybe through.
Right, but these companies are also these like multi-million-dollar companies that have huge marketing arms that could be pushing smaller stuff more, and they don't. Oh, it's a smaller book, so we'll tack an extra dollar onto it instead because the hardcore fans will pay the extra dollar.
Right.
Right? Instead of making it the book that's a little bit less costly for people because they want to entice people trying, right? There are a whole host of books right now for Marvel and DC that probably sell less than 20,000 copies a month that are fantastic books, and they're better than the stuff in the top 10.
Yeah.
Right? And I mean, take a look at like Usagi Yojimbo sells maybe 3,000 copies a month.
But 4,500 on average.
4,500 on
average.
Thanks, Scott. Right? You know, but it's this great book.
Yes.
Which, you know, people don't necessarily pick up on a monthly basis.
Yeah. But if we try to track back, I forgot where we started with this argument, but this discussion. But I think it was how to grow Image, Dark Horse, IDW, and I think that you know IDW tying everything in through Infestation was a mental note on their part, a purposeful thing on trying to get all the properties somehow connected, because that's what's working for DC. That's what's working for Marvel.
Yeah.
Their whole universe is tied together, and all like you guys said, it's all superhero. But everything is connected. You can buy one, be influenced by another, and jump on and that kind of stuff. Whereas I don't think those Transformers fans had any inkling or interest in that Doctor Who book sitting right beside it. You know. So anyway,
I think you're seeing a growth in the smaller publishers because everybody wants to do their own book. They want to own their own property. I'm just looking at your comic rack there, and we see Fatal, who's a very strong book, Ed Brubaker, who's just announced that he's ending his Captain America run.
Yep.
He wants to work on his own property. All these creators are leaving Marvel and DC because they want to own their character. They want to own their property. And Image, IDW, Dark Horse, Dynamite, Boom, these places are all welcoming them with open arms and letting them do whatever comic book they want to do.
Yeah, okay. There's a great test, right? There's a great test. Okay, so because you have Spider-Man, you have Batman, okay, then you have, you know, Frank Miller, okay, you have Ed Brubaker, okay. I wish Ed Brubaker did Spider-Man. My argument would make more sense, but anyway, you have these guys that did great with the characters for the big companies, and then now they've created their own, and they jump over to Image to try to make all the cash on their own. Is it hurting Batman and Spider-Man? I don't think so. There's a lot of other up-and-coming talented guys that are jumping on to the Spider-Man and to Batman. And Batman, you know, that the Night of the Owls thing or whatever it is just huge. Batman's just selling like crazy now. Batman is bigger than he's – as big as he's ever been in terms of monthly comics and stuff like that. So, I mean, yeah, why not then make your name on Batman and Spider-Man and then jump over to Image and try to sell your own stuff?
But it's harder. But what I'm saying is Marvel and DC could be having stronger creator-owned imprints within them that they pushed more.
Right.
And I mean, Marvel has some of the icon stuff, so like they do. But even though the company has this monster multi-million-dollar marketing arm behind it, they don't push the creator-owned stuff enough. And I think that if these smaller companies slowly are eating away at Marvel and DC's share, DC Marvel will have to change their mind and start doing some
more
stuff.
But you see, that's
stuff,
a good thing.
Right?
I agree with you there, and I hope they do that, and I hope they make Marvel and DC realize, hey, we also have to get as creative and as free, I guess, with the creators as these guys are if we're going to keep up. So
what's in the top 10? What's in the top 10 there, Walt?
We went off on a slight tangent there.
We were excited.
Sorry. Yes. Well, you know what's in the top 10? I find this very interesting and kind of we'll discuss it for one bit. So obviously Avengers versus X-Men 5 and 6 are number 1 and 2. And two of the stalwarts from the New 52, Batman and Justice Leagues, are 3 and 4. 9 and 10 is Spider-Men number 1 and another AVX number 3. But what I find interesting is 5, 6, 7, and 8 are all before Watchmen. Okay. Now, the reason I wanted to ask you guys this is, remember 2 months ago, 3 months ago, 4 months ago, everybody was pooping on the Before Watchmen. You know, Moore said it was a terrible idea. Some guys were going, you know, Before, why revisit this? Why did that? Why do that? You know, 4 in the top 10, obviously. Now, I know these are diamond orders through retailers, yeah, but obviously there's seems to be a notion that there's a big public demand for to consume Before Watchmen, sure, stuff.
But sales doesn't necessarily equal quality, right? And except for Batman and Justice League, every book in this top 10 is a gimmick book. Now, that doesn't mean that they're good or bad,
right,
but it means that they have a hook, right? It's
sure,
like Avengers fighting X-Men, or here is what happened before
yeah,
Watchmen, or yeah, here's yeah, the Ultimate Spider-Man, the regular Spider-Man, right? Like all of them are gimmick books that are pulling in something because it was great, right? All of these are Superman versus Muhammad Ali.
But hold on,
right?
No, Anthony, come on. Like, hold on. What is the problem with the Watchmen being great? And what is the problem with some really creative creators revisiting that whole property and giving us new content to it? Why is that a gimmick? Like, why? What's the problem with feeding more Watchmen material to Watchmen fans who are obviously ready to consume it? Like, Darwin Cook, from what I didn't read the Darwin Cook, the Minutemen one.
I didn't read it, but from what I saw running past the front cover,
yeah,
it was very solid. Is that what you're saying?
No, I didn't say it. No, I've got feedback from people that have read it and enjoyed it, is my point.
And I read Minutemen number 1, and I thought it was solid as well. Right.
I don't have anything against Before Watchmen.
No.
I think it's great.
I think
that Before Watchmen in the top 10 is telling critics to, here's to you, you know.
But what I'm saying
on this.
What I'm saying is that the top 10 books are essentially gimmicks, right? Like, essentially, like it's a sales hook, not necessarily based on the quality of the work. Right now, a lot of these are of good quality. Like Spider-Man is excellent, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
So I mean, I'm not trying to say that any of these are not high quality or not. What I'm saying is that all of them, because they're gimmicks, like the sales are not necessarily indicative of something which is, you know, very, very popular because of quality. It's
right,
indicative of something
right,
which has been marketed into a hook, right?
Yeah, yeah. I guess my only argument there is that actually Before Watchmen was belittled. Before Watchmen was panned by the creator of the Watchmen, and you know, the critics on the internet were kind of saying, you know, why, you know, Before Watchmen, and yet, you know, the fans have fought through that and spoken.
The fans have fought through that, but also, right, like every part of Before Watchmen is not going to be good, right? Like there's going to be bad comics in Before
right,
Watchmen,
yeah,
right? You know, like. Andrew R. Dizzy, when he was writing for Comic Book Daily, he wasn't a big fan of the comedian, right?
Right.
And I mean, he was pretty disappointed because he liked the creative team. Like, he was hoping to really like it.
Right.
And he was disappointed in it, right? And the problem with the way that sort of comic fans are, right, is that especially if something is a 4 or 6 issue miniseries, people are pretty reluctant to drop it. Right? Like,
no,
I,
no.
I mean, if you buy an issue 1 because you think the idea is kind of good, you're like, oh, probably it's pretty good. You know, it wasn't great. Maybe I'll get better in issue 2. Then issue 2, you're like, oh, maybe I'll give it to issue 3. And then you say to yourself, well, I'm halfway through. I might as well just stick with it, right? Even though you didn't really like it that much.
Yeah. And cheaper if I get the last 3 than if I have to buy the trade afterwards, right? So.
And I guess the like part of the backlash and part of the fight that happens is that because people have to pay their hard-earned money for all this stuff, right? Like there's sort of almost an unspoken contract between the companies and between the fans
yeah,
that we're going to give you quality,
Right.
Right? Like you know, we're now everything isn't going to be Watchmen or isn't going to be Dark Knight Returns, right? Because everything doesn't have to be, right?
Yep.
But there is sort of this unspoken contract that you're shelling out your $4. We are going to give you the best quality comic that we possibly can. It's going to have the best art. It's going to have the best story. You're going to be pulled in, and you're going to pick up the next issue, right? And when it doesn't deliver on that, or when they create an idea that will sell, whether it's good or bad, right? Because, I mean, before Watchmen was going to sell, all of these could have been total garbage, and they still would have sold.
Yeah.
Right? Now, they're not all, right? But because it's a hook, right? I mean, same thing with Avengers versus X-Men, right? And I mean, some of the Marvel Now stuff that we'll get to later, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That is exciting stuff because it's a gimmick, because we haven't seen that before, right? Like, if I told you that I was going to write a comic book about Wolverine fighting zombies, you'd be like, man, this is pretty cool. I want to see Wolverine slash. It could be Wolverine slashing zombies for literally 6 issues, and it would sell because that's kind of a neat idea. Right. It doesn't mean that I have the best art on it. It doesn't mean that I have the best writing on it, but it's a neat idea. It's a neat hook, and that will sell books.
Go ahead. These Watchmen number one issues are selling because there's been so much press. People are just interested. You couldn't go to a comic book news site and not see things about, oh, the Alan Moore says this about this, and Dave Gibbons is part of the package, and Len Wein is...
Bad publicity is better than bad
exactly.
Publicity.
Yeah. It just stirs it up, and people say, oh, what is this? Oh, these books are all supposed to be crap. I'm going to pick them up and judge myself, or I'll buy them and ridicule them.
This wasn't supposed to be made. Alan Moore didn't want this to be made. I'm going to pick it up and see what all the fuss is about. Right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, good point. All right. Anyway, the good news is, I guess... first 6 months of the year compared to the last first 6 months of the year, comic sales are up, graphic novel sales are up. So numbers are up across the board from Diamond, which is good for the industry.
But I mean, Walt, like, I mean, and in terms of some of the studies, I guess it'd be you or RJ to take a look at this. Don't we have more books now, though, that are in the $4 and $5 range? So, I mean, when we talk about dollar value sales that are going up, don't we just have more books that actually, like, have a higher cover price, and therefore it'll go up anyway?
Yeah, you know,
right? I mean,
I don't have the data there. I honestly think, too, I could be wrong here, but I honestly think year over year, I think unit sales might be up, too. So,
which is good. I mean, like, that's what we want, right? We want, unit sales to go up.
I still think, I mean, we're not going to spend time on this because we're going to end this on just my opinion that, as always, the problem with getting the unit sales up is not so much content, because I think it's pretty good. It's a distribution issue. I've always thought that. I've always we basically have painted ourselves into a corner where there are 20-some-odd hundred specialty shops in North America, some of them in Hell's Half Acre, somewhere in a hole-in-the-wall part of the city, and that's the only place you can legitimately get your comic books on a weekly basis, right? So they're not out. You know, when 11 million people – I don't know, I'm making up numbers again. When 11 million people can go to watch The Avengers, the first movie, the first 5 days or 4 days, and that their comic sells 120,000, you know, that I think speaks as much to them, most of the people, not really being able to access them easily. Can you imagine if they were just, I don't know, a guy in a vending machine out in the front of the movie theater on his little ice cream truck selling the Avengers and stuff like that.
I can barely imagine a guy with a vending machine on his ice cream truck selling Avengers comics.
Very heavy. Beautiful.
That is
quite
this.
The mixed
my
metaphor.
My point is, I think...
Billion-dollar idea for you folks.
Access is the issue.
Well, yeah, but just... Walt, are you a James Bond fan?
Yes.
Anthony, are you a James Bond fan?
Who isn't?
Fan.
Yes. Who isn't?
How many of the Ian Fleming novels have you read?
All of them.
None of them.
Right. See, here's a nice split. So there's three of us James Bond fans.
Yeah.
One person has read the novels. Two of us have never read a single novel. Right. I have all the novels at home unopened. I keep planning on reading them.
Yeah.
So there's your, I mean, they're against your argument of people rushing for the Avengers movie to buy a comic book.
All right.
What comic did Marvel have ready to go for the first time Avengers reader? What was available? Nothing. Marvel did no prep whatsoever for the Avengers movie fan to walk into a comic store and buy a comic.
I'm going to tell you
something. There was that Avengers Assemble comic, though.
I'm going to tell you something. I'm going to tell you something, Scott. I'm going to tell you something, what I think, all right?
Is it about ice cream truck vending machines?
Yes.
Because so comics.
You go into, boy, you know, our friend Danny Champ in England tells me the store. What's the store? Rockaways?
Brookstones?
Brookstone, thank you. Brimstone, Barnes & Noble's, Chapters. I'm going to stick it out on the line here and say that there's a spike in Ian Fleming novel sales when a new Daniel Craig or whoever James Bond movie comes out.
Yes.
There's a spike.
The last two movies haven't been based on Ian Fleming novels.
Okay, I'm not going to finish my train of thought.
The last two movies, or Casino Royale was?
The last one and the one coming out now.
So, but the books were reissued when Casino Royale came out.
Anthony, don't give me that. Listen.
Right? It was brand new.
It's because Barnes & Noble and Chapters and all these places are literally 30 meters from the movie theater.
Literally.
Or figuratively.
Yeah.
And you could walk into those places and pick up an Avengers trade paperback if you were so inclined.
I am talking about just, you know, brand new comics.
Well, the market wants books. They want trade paperbacks. They want these collected editions.
And, I mean, part of it is, and all the companies have to deal with this because, again, the Green Lantern movie did not translate into an upswing in Green Lantern comic sales.
It was a bad movie,
you know?
Though.
Yeah. But it does increase Green Lantern toy sales, right?
And
T-shirt sales and things like that, right? Like, so, I mean, they're making money from the movies.
They're just not selling comics.
It's just not selling comics.
Right? Like, the source material just being overlooked. All right, listen. I don't know how, with Chris, I never go off on tangents like this. You guys are just hijacking the whole thing here. Come on. Let's move this boat along and then move on to the next thing. Just before you move on, one more thing.
Scotty V is all over
not
this.
Not just the top comics. I've also got the list of the top 50 graphic novel sales, and I hate to skip by that because I noticed, you know, you're championing the floppy there, but not the hardcover.
All right, go ahead.
So I just, nothing terribly interesting other than Fatale trade paperback came in at number 6, which is very interesting. Of course, Walking Dead leads the list. I wanted to point to number 30 because it is the David Mazzucchelli Born Again Artist Edition from IDW that had a retail price of $125.
Wow.
And this book listed at number 30 in overall volume sales.
Volume sales?
That is astronomical.
Wow. Yeah. Well, that's a good, I mean, Born Again.
Yes. I mean, it's stunning, but just to say, I mean, you were looking at market share and you look at an IDW book, an artist edition, very high profile, very expensive book coming in at number 30. I couldn't let that guy go by with a mention.
I can't let one other thing go by off that list now that you brought that
list
up. You know, to our dear friend, Mr. Moore. I hope he notes that I think number 3 on the list is Watchmen, something that has disappeared off the list for a year or so.
And
to the hot buzz created by the Before
that
Watchmen
is
books.
Thanks to the Before Watchmen books. And the reason for that is because DC gave away free copies of the Watchmen trade paperback and Absolute Watchmen based on the number of Before Watchmen number 1 comics that were purchased by the store.
See, now you got to throw my whole thing.
But wait.
So you're saying that there wouldn't have been a spike
at all? They would not have appeared here other than those free copies. Oh, yeah.
Come on.
Wait. Let's just hang on. Let's back this up. Do these sales include books sold from vending machines on ice cream trucks?
In front of movie theaters.
Are those included in the sales?
These people want to keep their comics on ice.
I'm just saying, if they have. Marvel Now.
Let's move on.
This is the hottest thing.
Hottest thing. So I'm reading about Marvel Now, and I'm a little bit confused on what Marvel Now is. I'm not sure what it is. Is it a reboot?
It is not a reboot.
Is it?
Don't call it a comeback. It's been here for years.
Yeah. Is it a wipe the slate clean?
No, it is. It is a new starting point.
Well, isn't that the same thing?
No. Because because a reboot
would be a new starting point.
Is basically saying that the previous continuity, that story has ended.
Right.
Now you are starting again from page one.
Yes.
Right. This they're saying Marvel Now is a series of bold new directions for the titles, but the previous continuity is still intact. It's just what all of these characters are doing now. They're going off in different ways. This isn't your dad's Incredible Hulk.
This is your Incredible Hulk.
That's right.
Right.
And the flagship title, Uncanny Avengers.
That's the worst, stupidest title I've
X-Men ever heard. Avengers in one giant super team. What could possibly go wrong with this? Yeah. Rick Remender and John Cassidy?
John Cassidy.
John Cassidy,
the
Rick Remender.
Slowest artist in the business.
So, fantastic artist, though.
Yes.
Going to be a solid book. This is going to be the number one seller that month. Uncanny
Absolutely.
Avengers number
Every
one.
Every 4 months when an issue ships, because John Cassidy got
listen,
the art
guys,
done, it's going to be a hot
Here's
topic.
The problem with that. I mean, you put how can I say this? You switch Mick and Roger Daltrey over, or you mix them into each other, and you end up with crap. Right, you know what I'm saying is, say the X-Men. There's that beautiful synergy within the X-Men. There's that X-Men has kind of morphed over the years.
When's the last time you read an X-Men comic, Walt?
I read an X-Men comic about 3 months ago, but it was one that was about 30 years old. So I apologize.
Perfect.
Yes.
Perfect.
But my point
totally
is
totally qualified
my
to talk about.
My point is
it.
Though, the X-Men is a team that is super popular for obvious reasons. People like the synergy of the team
and the Avengers. Is a super popular team. People like the synergy of the team.
Yes.
So why would people not like the Uncanny Avengers?
That's right. The super synergy.
Right? Because then you're...
You like peanut
make,
butter.
It doesn't... No.
You like peanut butter. You like chocolate. You just, like Reese's peanut butter cups.
Wrong.
This is the Reese's peanut butter cups of comic books.
Absolutely
right?
Not.
It
no.
has Spider-Man. It has Wolverine. It has Cyclops. He has an X on his visor. I can't believe people haven't thought of
Listen.
That before. That's just is
no. He's just got the one eye as well.
It's
very
come on. It's solid.
No, it's not going to work.
This is so crazy. It's going to work. And
no,
the,
it's
and,
it, Anthony.
And kids
to
are going
to
be clamoring.
It's a gimmick.
It is a gimmick, but it doesn't mean that gimmicks aren't necessarily bad. It's just you have to recognize
that
they're a gimmick.
It doesn't mean they're necessarily good either.
No, I understand
there
that.
There could be terrible gimmicks.
I understand
and this
that.
Is one of them.
But so Rick Remender right now, he's writing Secret Avengers, which is the most underappreciated Marvel title out there.
Right.
Right? He understands the team book. He understands wacky dynamics with lots of different characters. This is going to be a solid, solid read. Very intrigued. About this one, and as a flagship title for a non-reboot, I think this is going to be good. Like, I think this is going to really kind of
really,
introduce
Anthony,
lots of characters and people.
That
yeah,
mixing the Avengers,
yeah,
in
and
with
the
X-Men is going to turn into
a big deal. Yeah,
Beast is already an X-Men and an Avenger. Wolverine's both. I mean, you're already halfway there.
Wow!
And just as a tie-in to
you guys,
just as a tie-in to the previous discussion, Marvel is really focusing on the creative teams on these books. Remember earlier we were talking about. How these artists and creators were trying to get away and spotlight themselves by their own independent works.
Yes.
Marvel's providing a big name boost to these creators like Brian Michael Bendis and Rick Remender.
Uh-huh.
So they get a spotlight as part of this non-reboot.
This non-reboot.
Non-reboot, correct.
Right. Okay. So this super-duper, what's it called again?
Uncanny Avengers.
Uncanny Avengers. Okay, the name just sounds wrong. I don't know.
You are going to see kids running in the streets after ice cream vending machines
yes.
trying to pick up this book.
This would book. You, I hope
would,
so.
Would you prefer Mighty X-Men as opposed to Uncanny Avengers? Is that?
You know, it might be. Yeah, I don't know.
But,
know. Just, it
but they can
wrong.
Do that too. That's another title.
Perfect.
You see?
You have all the X-Men Avengers
yeah.
that weren't on the first team.
So what
they
you
can
do
be
is
part
you
of the
write
Mighty
them
X-Men.
And some of them have fights and they don't get along. And then they leave, and then they make the Mighty X-Men.
And you bring Spider-Man and Wolverine on every book.
Right.
And they're on top seller.
Yeah. Right. Okay, so... But
and zombies.
Okay, so...
Right, but I mean, I actually thought that New 52 was actually a good idea too, right?
Right.
Because you can't really have 80 years of continuity and expect it to make any sense.
Yeah, New 52...
Especially when it's the take of, you know... 200-300 different creators and them trying to make their own little stamp of,
and trying to make it all work,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Like, and I mean, nobody complains when there's a new Sherlock Holmes movie, right? Nobody goes, "Oh my God, another Sherlock Holmes movie!"
But
didn't they do
Sherlock
that already
Holmes.
With Basil Rathbone? Like, nobody ever says
and Nigel
that.
Bruce.
How is that a comparison to this?
Because the character is done and done and done and done and done over again. right?
No, I'm not arguing that. I think that's great that the character is done and done and done and done and done. I was just kind of arguing that, you know, making the X-Men and the Avengers into one team, I didn't think was a good idea.
Yeah.
I think it's a great idea.
Yeah, because I think it's going to be a fun idea. I think it's a way to introduce lots of new characters to new readership, right? Like, the main problem that comics the industry faces nowadays is that the readership is getting older, and they need to have new and different ways where old farts like us can share comics with young kids. Wow. and introduce characters around.
It's almost like Marvel is saying the X universe is so secular there, and they don't want to. Well, they don't want to join in with the rest of the Marvel. Those X fans, all they read is X Factor, X Force, X this, X that. I'm going to make them read Avengers.
But like the main X-Men title sounds a little bit strange because like with the original five X-Men are coming from the past to the current time, and they think that it seems all very very strange. Like it's.
We'll have to wait and see.
It's like a very strange concept like right, that one. Yeah. But again, like there's neat ideas, right?
Listen,
you got to be doing new and different stuff.
They did it with X-Force, the original team.
Marvel is rolling this whole thing out over, 5 months? Because they think it's just...
Four or 5 months, yeah. Well, I mean...
To quote them, a more humane approach than the wipe the slate clean reboot.
Yes, yes. Well, and I mean, I have to admit, it is sort of weird to see every book from DC being the same number.
Yeah.
Right. Like that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That just seems weird.
This month, right?
Right.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
It just seems strange.
They've canceled books now. We see new books coming out. So
yeah,
that's
it's
starting to change.
A little bit of variation.
Yeah, still going to be the the detective, the Batman, the action, the Superman, the Justice League, and all that kind of stuff. All right. So Marvel now. We'll see Anthony where the dust settles. Let's talk about Amazing Spider-Man real quickly.
Real quickly.
Did anybody see the movie?
No,
I haven't.
No.
Not yet. I haven't either.
All right,
we're hoping you treat us well.
It's breaking records.
It made a lot of money.
It's breaking records. What, 140 mil?
Yeah.
Over, I guess it was though that big
4th of July week though, man.
Yeah, so it's like
the
a
big
5
movie
day
week.
Weekend, right?
Who doesn't love a reboot?
Huh?
Who doesn't love a reboot?
Well, I think it's good. I think it's important. I think
strong cast, really strong cast.
Hey, listen, I think it's very important. I think that movie, like Spider-Man, is it right? Spider-Man is it. I think these big movies.
It's got Sally Field in it. So.
Yeah, very good. Okay.
Martin Sheen.
Yeah, but this is what I want to say: is Spider-Man is Marvel's gem.
Absolutely.
Hello.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, Spider-Man is a character that we have to anchor to the young kids. So
yes.
It's very important that these big movies that 9, 10, 11, 12-year-olds are going to go to, this new Spider-Man, who are seeing their first Spider-Man kind of, it's very important that they like it. And it's very important that that kind of anchors that character as, the front line character for Marvel. If it was a piece of crap and stuff like that, that could undermine Spider-Man. Not right away, don't get me wrong, not right away, but 10, 12 years from now, when those young kids, that most of them are consuming the character through movies as opposed to through comics, as we discussed earlier, you got to get your best character in a really good film. And make him penetrate deep into the psyche of the kids.
Okay, wait.
Sorry.
Would it be better if instead of going to movie theaters, we just had a bunch of screens on ice cream truck vending machines?
It might work.
Would it just be better if kids were just running around on those?
It would be more mobile.
Is that
right? It would.
Is that
and you'd hit. The lower income places where maybe the kids can't go to the movies. Right?
But they get a cold treat as well. So.
No,
because I strongly feel that, especially since none of us have actually seen the movie yet, that we're the most qualified people to
Absolutely.
Talk about this.
Absolutely.
I feel really,
totally,
that's the best.
I agree with you on one thing, but I think all three of us are more than qualified enough to philosophize on the importance of the movie being liked by the new generation.
It's true. However,
thank you.
We did hear from one of our writers,
at
Comic Daily, Ed Campbell, that it really isn't for like younger kids. Like it's a little bit spooky. It seems to be geared at kind of like the tweens and higher, right? Which again, that's a lucrative market.
Yes.
But in terms of where you're talking about bringing in a brand new new you know, a group of young kids. That's not what they're doing. They're trying to pull.
Here's my take on that. We're going to end it on that because we're running out of time. But here's my take on that: is you make the movie for the tweens because the little guys will want to look up and like the stuff that the tweens like. The tweens will never like the stuff that you make for the 7-year-olds. But the 7-year-old,
I feel that Disney and Pixar totally disagree with you. But
the 7-year-old will aspire to like what his 13-year-old brother likes. Anyway, I think that's it.
Where are we at? How much time we have left there, Scott?
Engineer Scott.
Yeah, that's a wrap.
That's a wrap. All right, so let's finish this off.
Where's that
last
page?
Here you go. Here's your last
page. Hey, listen, that's all the time we have for today, which is what Scott should have said.
Perfect.
All right. And Comic Culture produced by my man right here, Anthony Falcone. Engineered today by Scott Vanderploeg. For comments and suggestions, please visit comicbookdaily.com. Click on the podcast link. Scroll to the comments field and please add your comments. Look for us on podcast at comicbookdaily.com and getthepointradio.com.
And remember, comics rock the party that rocks the body. I don't know what that means.
And go out and support your local comic book shop.